Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week, the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance take you beyond the numbers and hype, right to the heart of the big issues of the day. Today, we're exploring the UBS Global Family Office Report 2020, produced by UBS in partnership with their colleagues in UBS Evidence Lab. The average assets under management of the 121 clients surveyed is significantly larger than that of any other comparable study in the market, so the findings offer a unique window into the actions of the world's biggest family offices. Our panellists on today's programme will explain why no two family offices are the same, how the COVID-19 pandemic has shifted the focus of those in this space, and reveal those characteristics that family offices share with big institutional investors, and, perhaps critically, those that set them apart. They will also explain why applying meticulous asset allocation strategies and rigorous investment processes, and their ability to embrace and to manage risk, have enabled family offices to ride out recent storms. We start with Maximilian Kunkel, UBS Chief Investment Officer for GFO. Max, thanks for being with us on the show. We'll talk in a moment about the competitive advantages of family offices compared to many institutional and retail investors and how they've manifested over recent weeks. But first, Max, maybe just give us a quick introductory note, first of all, on what a family office is and how it functions.
Family offices are typically privately held vehicles that handle things such as investment management and financial planning for wealthy families. And again, here, when we're thinking about wealth management, it can really be a very broad-based approach from coordinating philanthropic activities to succession planning.
Max, let's talk about why there are advantages if we look at the big institutional picture, retail investors, that sort of thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what those differences are and why, I guess, particularly after the last few months, it's been particularly relevant?
So in a nutshell, family offices have really three advantages over many institutional and retail investors. First, they are less constrained in their asset allocation approach. So think, for example, about insurance companies that are forced to invest according to certain regulations, or think about retail investors that have a relatively small set of investment opportunities at hand. Second, they can afford to take a long-term view. Third, they have the ability to opportunistically take advantage of market dislocations via a broad range of strategies that might not be available to other institutional investors or retail investors.
Well, yeah, and let's, I guess it's pretty obvious actually, but why, maybe explain to us the mechanics of why what we've been seeing, experiencing these last, 3 to 6 months have really shown those three advantages in, really kind of at work.
Absolutely. So if we're thinking about the unconstrained asset allocation approach that they can take, and we're looking at the last few weeks, that unconstrained diversification across regions, public and private markets have helped them go through the COVID-induced market volatility very effectively. So the GFO report, for example, shows that survey participants' maximum drawdown was only 13% on average during the crisis. Equally, the discipline and the ability to maintain that long-term view has also proven its value. Many investors sold out of long-term positions at depressed valuations out of panic or because they had to raise liquidity. On the other hand, more than half of family offices rebalanced their portfolios in March, April, and May. So they bought into the market recovery, not so much out of foresight, but out of discipline and due to their ability to maintain a long-term view on strategic asset allocation. Now, at the same time, we also saw family offices opportunistically take advantage of market dislocations with parts of their portfolio. And this was often done via derivative or leverage strategies that might not be available to other investors.
Well, yeah, and can we talk then a little bit more about changes, therefore, in whether it's, allocation by asset class through the last, we're sort of looking at kind of 18-month period, aren't we, in the report? And then tell us, again, what we are seeing, or what we have seen then in the last few months as well, how that picture's continuing to develop.
So clearly we have already seen before the COVID crisis and increased interest in raising longer-term allocation to real assets. And as with many things, this trend has only been accelerated by COVID-19. Broadly speaking, from our perspective, when we're looking at the world post-COVID-19, we think it's going to be a world which is going to be more indebted, more digital, and less global. Now, that has significant implications for investors of all sorts. For example, greater debt levels would mean that we'll see ongoing financial repression, higher taxes, and moderately higher inflation. And family offices are taking note, whilst savers and institutional investors are likely going to be at a disadvantage in this situation, particularly institutional investors that have to continue to buy low-yielding nominal assets. Family offices are already considering adjusting their long-term allocations even further in favor of real assets. To give you an example, almost half of the family offices in the survey told us in May that they're planning to raise their allocations to real estate and equities. And in a more digital and less global world, as we see it, and as many other family offices see it also, this allocation is set to become even more differentiated between the winners and the losers from technological disruption, and more global. In a world that is becoming less global, portfolios have to become even more global in order to take advantage of opportunities outside of the region where one is operating principally.
Max, it's interesting. You mentioned their long-term picture, and one part of the report that I found really interesting reading was section four, which looks at, you know, the super long-term, if you like, you know, this generational shift, the challenges ahead as maybe the, you know, the current generation of kind of active family office managers, you know, look to potentially sort of pass on control. And there are some interesting learnings, aren't there, about that? And this doesn't necessarily follow, you know, some narratives we've talked about before on this program, things like this big transfer between, you know, boomers to millennials. Maybe the picture's a little bit different. Can you tell us something about that and about how what these conversations are like with family office clients, about, you know, what their intentions are and the kinds of preoccupations they have when it comes to that picture?
So first of all, what's interesting is that the topic of succession for many family offices continues to be the elephant in the room. So even though our surveys family offices already support two generations, we see that many of the owners continue to keep their options open when it comes to handing over responsibility. In fact, every third family office does not know when there will be a change of control. For the ones where we are already seeing that the next generation is somewhat engaged or extremely and very engaged, we are seeing that many of the principal drivers when it comes to how to invest are also taken up by that next generation. And that is principally how to achieve one's financial goals in the best risk-adjusted way, always still with a long-term view. And here, what's interesting at this is not so much about only looking for philanthropic activities, but really about trying to mingle what one's own values are and how those can best be reflected also in how wealth is being invested and spent with financial returns. And when we're thinking about sustainable investing, that's really what comes out of the report, that this is what the next generation cares about the most. They care, next to having their values reflected in the financial portfolio, about financial returns. Now, the good news is that this actually bodes quite well also for sustainable investing in those portfolios in the decades ahead. But if you think about it, sustainable investing is nothing else but talking about disruption. So you're trying to generate more from less. You're trying to make more efficient use of available resources. And the preference of family offices and the next generation of family offices for strong investment returns will therefore naturally lead them into the space as the opportunity set grows. Some people think that the next generation is only concerned about societal and environmental developments, but above everything else, also how to combine that with financial market opportunities.
Reinhard Olsen is head of the global family office business in the Americas. Reinhard, thanks for being on the show. Reinhard, just to start, let me drill down in a little more detail into I guess not so much just risk appetites, but actually risk management. Because I noticed that in the foreword to the Family Office report that I think was penned by your colleague Joseph Stadler, he talked about the fact that family offices sort of embrace risk and manage it like no other investor. I think that was the phrase he used. Can you tell us a bit about why that's the case and what that actually looks like?
Yeah, I think, you know, the unique thing about these family offices is that by nature, they have permanent capital. They're not dependent on investors coming and going or performance in a particular quarter or a particular month or particular year to be able to either attract or retain capital. This is their capital. And a lot of these family offices are based off wealth that was built around businesses that the beneficial owners built over the years. And many of those businesses, you know, involve taking risks. It involves risk-taking in terms of building this kind of incredible wealth. And that type of risk mentality very often translates into how they think about investment. That's not to say that they take outsized risk, but risk is a very core element in how they think about the business. So as we saw back in March, April, when the markets were extraordinarily volatile, and obviously primarily to the downside in terms of equity markets specifically, a number of these family offices were opportunistic and entered into the market in a significant way, either on a leverage or just on an outright basis to take advantage of very significant sell-offs in public equity markets, for example. They were also active in the private markets that were dislocated for a period of time. And some of these family offices were able to pick up some very interesting investments at a significant discount to where those investments had been only a few weeks earlier. And as Joe said in his report, you know, there is almost a fear among some of these very sophisticated offices to miss that opportunity. And I think that's where the tolerance for risk is very important, because obviously there's no certainty as to outcome.
And Reinhard, you've sort of alluded there to a couple of the report findings as it speaks to sort of strategic asset allocation. I just wonder if we look at allocation by asset class. I know there's lots of data in the piece about the full 2019 picture, obviously. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe how, you know, how much there's an overlay with what we generally expect to see in terms of other institutional investors, where maybe it diverges somewhat? Because presumably there are some things which are strikingly similar and maybe some things which are divergent.
Yeah, so I think, you know, with a background in the institutional market and have covered some of the largest hedge funds in the world over many, many years, they tend to be quite specialized, whether they are macro funds or equity funds or private equity funds, quant funds, et cetera, a lot of different strategies. What I find maybe unique about the family offices, and again, this has to do with the opportunity that arises from having permanent capital, is that they can span all of these strategies if they want to. Clearly, given the yield environment, equity has been a much bigger part of the portfolio typically than fixed income. Real estate often plays a very, very significant role in the portfolio and can be a big part of the investment strategy. But so does private transactions. You know, that can be private in terms of things like SPACs. It can be privates in terms of direct investments, or it can be privates in terms of participating in syndicated private market transactions. So I think the flexibility and again, permanence of capital plays a very significant role in the strategic asset allocation. But the, as highlighted in the report, strategic asset allocation is the number one factor for these family offices. They are very, very sophisticated, many of them. I would say look much more like very sophisticated large institutional investors than they did, for example, only in the last global financial crisis. So they've come a long way. And based on that sophistication, the way they think about products, the way they think about hedging, the way they think about opportunistic investment has developed very significantly.
And I just wonder, if we turn to private equity, I know that the piece underlines a few findings, survey findings, about how much of a key driver for returns that is for many family offices. Is it partly to do with private equities? I don't know, the qualities for diversification, is that a factor here?
Private equity clearly can afford an opportunity for diversification away from public markets because they're more unique in terms of both structure and returns and opportunity. But I think historically, family offices have thought about private equity as generally outperforming public markets. A number of family offices have built their wealth in industries where they have unique expertise, and that allows them to parlay that unique expertise into certain sectors of private equity. I think there's probably a bit of a setback post, or we're still in COVID, but post the immediate crisis of the pandemic, in terms of expectations of private equity returns. It will probably take some time for that market to fully recover. But again, patience here for family offices is an important part of the strategic asset allocation. And there's no doubt that private equity will continue to play a significant role in that strategic asset allocation.
Reinhard, one thing I was keen to ask you, as you've mentioned, with your background more in the institutional space, is this difference around certain thematics. And we often talk about a number of secular themes that sort of pervade almost all the conversations I have, whatever part of UBS I'm talking to. In this case, it's about sustainable investing, sustainability, something of a byword. But I guess, you know, family offices are not subject, are they, to the same or some of the similar kinds of regulatory concerns that a number of institutional players, you know, if we're talking about big pension funds in certain markets, for example, is there then a bit of a lag? And does this report speak to a bit of a lag in terms of the adoption of sustainable practices amongst family offices, perhaps?
You know, you're right. They're not under the same regulatory guidelines, but I think there is a very important line that runs through the more sophisticated family offices, and that's an awareness of ESG and sustainable investment. And, you know, it's very interesting as we see the next generation and the next generation behind that playing a more significant role in terms of managing family office wealth. They are very keen on sustainable investment. I think the difference here really lies in whether you're actively investing in sustainable industries and companies, or are you more passively avoiding companies that are not adhering to what we would say is sustainable behavior. And I think so far, it's more the latter, but over time, clearly, a more active management around companies that are pursuing a sustainable future will become a big part of the investment team. And as I said, I think that's becoming more and more important as the younger generation is emerging in the decision-making of the family offices.
Well, and perhaps finally, I did want to ask you a bit more about this idea of, you know, those generations to follow, the next in-line generations, I think they're referred to in the piece. Again, quite often on this show, we talk about this unprecedented wealth handover from, you know, boomer generation to millennials. What's the picture like here, Reinhard, when it comes to family offices? Because we obviously have a current generation of people who are in control of these offices in their, yeah, maybe 60s, 70s. There doesn't seem to be the same urgency or immediacy about a change of control. Is it quite interesting? Again, does it diverge from that other picture?
Yeah, I think, you know, so much wealth has been generated in this last generation that are currently the patriarchs or the beneficial owners of these family offices or businesses. There was, you know, some surprise in our survey that not more of them had an organized handover, if you will, in terms of next generation, in terms of managing the wealth of the family. But I think that will happen more naturally as well. I mean, we do a lot of advice to these type of family in terms of planning for next generation management. And, you know, it's not straightforward. There's a personal aspect. There's an ownership aspect where people feel they've built it. They want to control it. But the families who do it really well have a very planned strategy for transferring the management of the family wealth. And we're very keen and I think very capable in assisting with that. It does naturally, you know, progress as generations are growing up. And you can see it in certain part of the portfolios like technology or alternative energy, things like that, where the younger generations are taking very active roles. And that's a great introduction, obviously, to the next frontier. If we just look at how the technology sector, for example, now in the public markets are developing so rapidly.
And that's Reinhard Olsen, bringing us to the end of this edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.